DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet, and I'm Charlotta Lomas. Coming up over the next half hour, what's next for the climate?
With the US, historically the biggest carbon emitter, no longer in the game, there's going to be a slackening of whatever momentum developed post-Paris Climate Accords.
We catch up with prominent author and activist Bill McKibben for his take. We visit fire-devastated communities in Chile after the country's worst forest fires on record.
This land belonged to my grandfather, my father, and now I'm in charge of it. I used to play in the leaves when I was little. I still cannot believe that in such a short time, my family's livelihood has been wiped out.
Se quemó el trabajo de toda una vida, de mis abuelos, de mis padres.
Plus, we find out why some people are planting trees in the name of Trump. That's coming up. Stay tuned. Well, it's been a tumultuous year so far in US politics, particularly when it comes to the environment. Since taking office, US President Donald Trump has appointed several fossil fuel proponents as government officials. His proposed federal budget seeks to slash funding to climate research. And last week, the president signed an executive order that seeks to undermine climate change policies.
We've already eliminated a devastating anti-coal regulation, but that was just the beginning. Today, I'm taking bold action to follow through on that promise. My administration is putting an end to the war on coal. Going to have clean coal, really clean coal. With today's executive action, I am taking historic steps to lift the restrictions on American energy, to reverse government intrusion, and to cancel job-killing regulations.
The executive order paves the way for Trump to dismantle Obama's Clean Power Plan, which required states to collectively cut their carbon emissions by 32% below 2005 levels by 2030. Not surprisingly, the move has been met with fierce opposition from climate scientists and environmentalists. One vocal critic is American author and activist Bill McKibben. Bill is co-founder of the climate campaign group 350.org and has written extensively on the impacts of climate change. I reached Bill McKibben by phone in the United States. I wonder if you could just start off by explaining why climate change is one of the biggest issues facing the world today and just remind us all of what's really at stake here.
Climate change is beyond any doubt the biggest thing that human beings have ever done. We have one planet to live on, and we're managing to break it, and in short order. By that, I mean that the last 3 years have been the hottest we've ever recorded, and that's been enough to dramatically accelerate the melt of ice in the Arctic, where there's now less than half the ice that there was 30 years ago. It's been enough this past year to severely degrade and destroy huge parts of the Great Barrier Reef, which is the biggest living structure on Earth. It's enough that the hydrological cycles, the way that water moves around the planet, have been dramatically altered in place after place after place, because hot air holds more water vapor than cold, and hence we are getting more drought and more flood. So these changes are painful, dramatic, and still in their early stages. So far, humans have only raised the temperature of the planet about 1 degree Celsius. That's been enough to melt all that ice. We're on a path at the moment to raise that temperature as much as 3.5 or 4 degrees Celsius. If we do that, we will not be able to have civilizations like the ones we're used to having.
Well, Bill, since we last spoke, Donald Trump has become US president. Recently, he signed an executive order that paves the way to dismantle Obama-era climate regulations. What are the implications of this executive order?
Well, I think that the biggest implications, at least in the short run, are probably psychological. The United States has clearly announced that it's removing itself from the leadership in the fight against climate change. It had never been an enormously great leader, but it was about as good as there was on the international stage, at least aside from Europe. But with the U.S., historically the biggest carbon emitter, no longer in the game, there's going to be a slackening of whatever momentum developed post-Paris Climate Accords. I think it could not have come at a worse time. Perhaps others, like the Chinese, will pick up some of that slack and move forward. But this really is a global problem, and it really is a problem where time is the most important variable. That means that Donald Trump pulling the U.S. out of this process for a few years will have grave, grave implications, probably measured in geologic time.
And when he signed the executive order, Trump said he was putting an end to the war on coal and has promised a future of clean coal. Is there even such a thing as clean coal, and is there a future for it?
No, there's in global warming terms, there's no such thing as clean coal. When you burn it, you release vast clouds of carbon into the atmosphere. People have talked about figuring out some way to burn it and suck up all the carbon dioxide and pump it underground. But if you do that, the whole thing's so absurdly expensive that you're far better off just building the windmill in the first place. The only reason we even talk about it is because of the political power of coal operators. But that power is diminishing. They've automated the mines that they have so thoroughly that they employ very few people. There are twice as many people in America who work in car washes as work in coal mines. So the idea that somehow this is a crucial occupation, that we somehow must protect at any cost, is absurd. There are far, far more people already putting up solar panels than digging coal.
And less than 100 days in office, Trump has made plans to cut funding to climate research and the EPA and made orders that could undo all sorts of climate policies and regulations. What is the big picture here? What is Trump's agenda in the long term? And what further changes do you expect from him on the environmental front in the coming years?
The big picture is that he's a lying creep who's in way over his head as president of the United States. He has no more idea about climate change and environmental policy than he does about, you know, how to flap his wings and fly to the moon. That means that environmental policy has largely been subcontracted to the right-wing Republicans, people like the Koch brothers, who've been waiting for years to try and end environmental regulation because it gets in the way of some of their profits. They're now in the driver's seat, and they're getting all that they want from people like his EPA appointee, Scott Pruitt. But that also means, of course, that their fingerprints are all over what's going on. And as it backfires, as the planet heats, one hopes that they'll fall into disrepute soon enough that we can begin to recover from this damage with realistic and adult policies in the not-so-distant future.
There are some significant days of action coming up in April. First, on April 22nd, Earth Day, there's the March for Science, and 1 week later, on April 29th, there's the People's Climate March, marking 100 days of the Trump administration. Have these events taken on added meaning?
I think they've taken on different meaning. The plan, I think, was to go march, no matter who was president, at the end of April, but if it had been Hillary Clinton, it would have been an effort to get her to do the things that she'd promised to do. In the case of Trump, it's part of this large resistance that's been forming around so many issues, and a real reminder that people will not idly sit by and let their future be completely compromised. So it'll have a very different flavor than I think we thought it would 6 or 8 months ago.
And do you think proposed budget cuts to scientific work and the changes at the Environmental Protection Agency will mobilize more scientists and get them involved in politics?
Yes, I think scientists are becoming more politically engaged. I think they're beginning to understand that they have no choice. It's not an ideal situation. I mean, in a rational world, we'd let scientists do their work, and then when they offer explicit warnings, as they did 20 years ago around climate change, the rest of our political system would go to work acting on those warnings. But as we've all learned, that's not necessarily what happens. That power and money and influence can get in the way. And that's, I think, why scientists are now mobilizing.
You've been also heavily involved in protests against the Dakota and Keystone pipelines for the past several years. What are you planning to do now that the Keystone has been formally approved by the government?
Well, the Keystone pipeline's been formally approved by the State Department and the White House. But it's got some hoops to jump through yet, most of them in the states like Nebraska, where there's not even a route approved for this thing and where there is a lot of organizing and anger underway. It also has some financial hoops to jump through. It's not as if the price of oil is doing any favors to people in the tar sands where that pipeline begins. So I don't think we've seen the end of that story yet.
And finally, Trump's climate position does have many implications. Where do you predict the biggest resistance will come from?
I think that you're seeing resistance from smart scientists and from people in frontline communities who deal with the effects of climate change already. And I think the thing he needs most to fear is just the awakening of all those normal people in the middle who don't normally think that much about politics but know enough about the future to know that what we're doing is not safe and not smart and putting their children at risk. And that's a potent force once awakened.
When we spoke last year, you weren't particularly optimistic about our future, and a lot has happened since then. Would you say you're more or less optimistic?
I think it's very hard to be optimistic at the moment, except that there's a spirited resistance to Trump arising. And it's powerful to see that. We'll all be marching in Washington at the end of April, just as we marched in January after the inauguration and during the fights over immigration. And, you know, it's not as if Trump is a popular president, so at least that's some demonstration that there's some residual common sense left in the American body politic.
That was Bill McKibben, author, activist, and co-founder of the climate campaign group 350.org. From North America, we veer down south to Chile. Earlier this year, the South American country suffered one of the worst forest fires in its history. 11 people were killed and more than 500,000 hectares were destroyed. Vast swathes of forest in central and southern Chile have been reduced to charred trees. And as the ashes settle, locals are deciding how best to reshape their future against the backdrop of climate change and a monoculture of pine trees and eucalyptus, which many locals say is not the way forward. Jane Chambers went to the Maule region, some 400 kilometres south of the capital, Santiago, to find out more.
Years of drought and high temperatures were a fatal mix when it came to the fires that have devastated this region. Cerro Nami used to be home to a lush green forest, but now that's all gone. Julio Urrutia's family have lived here for generations.
Te lo juro que lo miro.
So looking at all the burnt trees around me, what are they?
Here you've got a mix of pine trees, eucalyptus, and some native trees. Just in front of us you can see a Chilean plant called litre and one called boldo, which is an endemic plant used for medicinal purposes. But now they are all burnt.
Tienes un boldo quemado. Pero el boldo es una planta medicinal.
Forest owner and local resident Julio recalls that dreadful day vividly.
Y de repente llegó una cantidad de humo impresionante.
It was terrible when the fire started and suddenly the air was filled with smoke. We came to where we are standing now at the bottom of the hill and saw the fire had arrived.
Al otro lado del humedal.
The forest fires, which killed 11 people, prompted the government to declare a state of emergency, Government figures suggest that 500,000 hectares and some 1,600 homes were destroyed in the fires, resulting in €309 million worth of damage.
Yo fui evacué a mi mamá con mis primos y 12 horas después cuando volví ya no había nada.
I had to get my family to safety, and when I came back 12 hours later, there was nothing left. This land belonged to my grandfather, my father, and now I'm in charge of it. I used to play in the leaves when I was little. I still cannot believe that in such a short time, my family's livelihood has been wiped out.
Casi surfeando en la arena ya no se puede hacer.
Evidence suggests that at least some of the forest fires were intentional. Rumors are rife about who is behind them, but it's still under investigation. In the meantime, many locals and environmentalists are becoming increasingly critical of the forest industry. They say that non-native pine and eucalyptus trees have damaged the soil because they suck up all the water. The species can also be highly flammable. Locals also argue that the fires were worse because plantations were allowed to expand right up to their communities without proper fire breaks to protect them. An hour's drive away from Cerro Nami, in the bustling coastal town of Constitución, Leonardo Vergara, who's head of CORMA, Chile's wood corporation in the Maule region, responds to their concerns.
Efectivamente, hay un problema importante de sequía, eso no cabe duda.
Yes, there's a big issue with droughts here. But you have to understand that due to climate change, we have had less and less rain every year in the last 50 years. That's not to do with the crop pine needing more water. It's to do with global climate change, meaning here is less water for the trees. So the issue isn't the species, it's also very important to look at how it's managed. Let's not forget that the pine tree isn't native to Chile. It originally comes from California, and there they are protected and managed. They don't have as many problems as we do, because the forests are open and the trees aren't so tightly packed together. Some of the companies need to do more to manage their forests better.
Across the street, I caught up with local councillor Fabián Pérez, who's convinced the forestry industry needs to change.
We are trying to get the regulations to be tightened up. We know that the plantations generate money and a good standard of living for a lot of people, but the impact they have on the environment is too much. I think that we should try and look after the forests better and go back to growing more native varieties of trees.
And that's something that many locals in the Mali region are trying to do, diversify, and not just rely on pine trees. Back at Cerro Nami, which is also in the Maule region, Pedro Garrido, who works with the conservation group CODEF, is taking me on a tour of some of the burnt-out plantations. Mm-hmm. Okay, vamos. The sun's beating down above, and most of the hills around have been blackened by the fire. It looks like a wasteland filled with charred trees that will have to be chopped down and cleared this year. But there are some signs of life, patches of green, some of them native trees that survived the fire.
Vamos a ese de ahí. Las especies nativas han crecido, han evolucionado bajo estas condiciones de suelo.
Let's take a walk over there. The native species are best suited to this type of environment. Before the pine trees, this area was completely covered with native species, and there was much more water available in the gullies for the families living here.
Permitía mantener una disponibilidad permanente de agua a las familias que extraían agua de las vertientes.
You can probably hear the leaves rustling beneath us. The hillsides are covered with burnt trees, orange. The ground is black with ash. What are your plans for the future for that hill behind us?
Lo que queremos hacer ahora es apoyar a los propietarios.
We want to support the locals by helping them to plant more native trees, and we are going to start the process by building a big greenhouse here, where we will have 10,000 saplings to reforest the hill and restore the native vegetation. We think this will give them a better water supply and help protect them against future fires. We are convinced the recent fires were so bad because pine burns much quicker than native wood.
De combustión mucho más lenta, cierto, y de soportar los incendios.
Hoy hemos peleado yo hoy con el peuco, ayer estuvo a punto.
At a lively meeting with the neighbours, the conservationist Garrido and his colleagues are explaining their plans to hand out chicken coops. They're hoping it will stop wild animals left with no food after the fires from attacking the local hens. The coops, like native tree planting, are just some of the ways the community is trying to repair itself after the devastating fires. So how else is this community adapting? Local forest owner and resident Julio Oritia explains.
Muchas de las napas de agua que tiene el bosque.
One of the good things to come out of this crisis is to see that the hill is getting more water. Because there are no pine trees to suck up all the water, we have seen that springs are returning, and that gives us hope. I personally want to go back to growing native trees rather than pine trees.
Aceite de oliva, plantar olivos si se puede, a lo mejor tener cítrico.
Just a few months after the fires affected communities across Chile, residents are still picking themselves up and dusting themselves off. With global temperatures rising, scientists predict hotter summers, drier winters, and more frequent forest fires. With this background, many here in Cerro Nami are left wondering what the future holds. For now, though, returning to their roots is all they know, and something they're desperate to do in order to provide for their future generations.
I want to go back to enjoying the hill with my daughter, to be able to pick an orange from a tree. But in the future, what I want most of all is to see that our hill is green again.
Jane Chambers, DW, Cerro Nami, Chile.
As replanting efforts get underway in Chile, over in New Zealand, a couple of activists have started a tree planting initiative of their own. Adrian Taylor and Dan Price are planting trees in the name of Donald Trump and encouraging others to do just the same. I reached Adrian and Dan by Skype in Christchurch to find out more.
My name is Adrian Taylor, and I am the founder of cap company Offcut and more recently the founder of Trump Forest.
My name is Daniel Price. I've spent the last 10 years studying Earth system science and the climate system. I cycled from New Zealand to Paris as part of a project called Pole to Paris to raise awareness of the COP21 climate change conference. And most recently, I've become involved in the Trump Forest Initiative to raise awareness around climate change and the bad decisions that are being made in the United States at the moment.
So what is the Trump Forest Initiative and how does it work?
So very simply, we want people, businesses and individuals to plant trees, to fund the planting of trees around the world. We don't want any money. We're not doing this to make any money. We don't want to handle any money. So what we're asking is for people to donate directly to tree planting programs around the world. We want them to donate the money straight to that tree planting initiative. They need to make the donation in the name of Trump Forest. Then they need to send us the receipt and we'll tally that up and add it to the global map on trumpforest.com.
And why did you decide to name the initiative Trump Forest? Where did that name come from?
Well, we know Donald Trump likes his things. There's Trump vodka, Trump towers, Trump chocolate. There's a whole bunch of Trump things. We know he likes his things, so we thought he might like Trump Forest too.
So it's a bit tongue-in-cheek what you're doing then.
The larger goal here is to draw attention and get people to understand that what the US government is doing is going to be detrimental to everyone's future. The Trump administration has sort of come in at a time. It's been really bad luck when this has happened. It was just when the world was beginning to start to get on the right path toward curbing the worst effects of climate change. The Paris Agreement was signed and agreed upon in December in the French capital of 2015. And the big emitters, China and the US, are really starting to get ahead of the game with regards to renewable energy and really start to get heading down the right road. And Trump has come in at a time which is kind of could have the ability to stop that in its tracks. So this initiative, in its most basic sense, is a way to curb the emissions that the Trump administration will cause to happen if they remove the Obama-era policies on climate change.
Right, but is planting trees really enough to offset any policy changes?
If we can plant enough trees through the Jump Forest Initiative to counter the loss of the Clean Power Plan, which is about 650 million tons of carbon dioxide by 2025, that is something that at least we can say we did something. And to achieve that, we need to cover an area in forest about a third the size of Germany. That sounds quite large as a standalone, but if you split that between all the countries of the world, we're only talking about an area of 300 to 400 square kilometers, which isn't very much. I think it is kind of tongue-in-cheek, this project, but we're using it as a mechanism to deliver a more important message, which is that businesses should start to take the lead on climate change action. If governments around the world, in this case the US, are not going to pull their own weight and be the leaders that they began to be under the Obama administration, then businesses, with the power that they have and the influence they have, need to lead the way.
Now, you're not just encouraging businesses, you're also encouraging individuals around the globe to plant trees. Where have you made your tree planting pledges?
Absolutely. There is nothing more invigorating, or there's no better way to connect with nature than planting a tree. It feels great. And there are benefits, obviously, for the environment in terms of, again, sequestering carbon. But it's just nice. It's just nice being around trees. Here, particularly in Christchurch, where we've pledged 1,000 native trees, we're doing it in an area. We're planting those in the Port Hills of Christchurch, which have just had devastating fires, which ironically are going to become more common as the planet heats up. So for us, it feels great. You know, we're helping directly to restore that environment. We're doing something tangible and something that feels like a protest against Donald Trump's ignorance from a long way from where he is, which is about as much as we can do.
Now, the initiative is still in its infancy. What would you like to see come out of Trump Forest?
Look, it sounds maybe a little bit cheesy, as we say here in New Zealand, but we actually genuinely want to empower people who feel like there's nothing they can do about Trump's ignorance, because there is very little that we can do about it. And it's incredibly frustrating to see just what's happening in the US. It actually beggars belief. And we just felt really powerless, I suppose, Dan and I, it's fair to say. So we thought, well, this is something that we can do, and hopefully we can pass on that sense of, yeah, doing something to people around the world, as you know, as small or as large as they want to engage with it. If it's just a dollar to plant one tree, or if it's $100,000 from a business like Patagonia or Tesla, we're here and we are very keen to get as much engagement with this as possible.
Dan and Adrian, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
That was Dan Price and Adrian Taylor from the Trump Forest Initiative. Well, that's all we have time for this week. To hear more episodes of Living Planet, just download the podcast on iTunes or find DW on SoundCloud. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. And of course, you can always visit our website, dw.com/environment. Thanks to all our reporters and contributors, and thank you to our studio team, Eliana Giaducci and Karen Henneker. I'm Charlotte Lomas. Until next time.
Come with me to the riverside. We can make plans there. Come with me to the riverside. Oh, we can take a rest there. Follow me to the old oak tree. We can stay there till the end of time. Oh, follow me to the old oak trees. We can watch the birds fly.